talk about the subject of lying. My lesson is titled, Lying is Sinful with Eternal Consequences. What does it mean to lie? All of us probably have been guilty of it. In fact, it's probably one of the first sins that we're guilty of. As a child, we don't tell the truth. A lot of times the reason we don't tell the truth is because we know we're going to get in trouble. And when we're little, of course, there's no sin involved because we're learning. And the parent has to correct and correct. But at some point in time, we are lying and we just downright know we're lying. So what does it mean to lie? So we're going to spend some time, and I've got a number of Bible passages, so I hope you'll take out your Bibles like we did last week and follow along, participate, look, and think with me. A lie can be a false statement, according to the American Heritage Dictionary. It can be a false statement deliberately presented as being true. Look at Mark chapter 14 as an example. So with some of these definitions, I want to start off by going to some Bible accounts and actually making the application as to what we're talking about and what it means to lie. So again, a lie can be a false statement that is deliberately presented as being true. So in Mark chapter 14, we have in verse 66, now as Peter was below in the courtyard, this is his denial, one of the servant girls of the high priest came. When she saw Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, "You also were with Jesus of Nazareth." But he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you're saying." And he went out on the porch, and a rooster crowed. And the servant girl saw him again and began to say to those who stood by, "This is one of them." And he denied it again. A little later, those who stood by said to Peter again, "Surely you are one of them, for you are a Galilean, and your speech shows it." Then he began to curse and swear, "I do not know this man of whom you speak." And a second time the rooster crowed. Then Peter called to mind the word that Jesus had said to him, "Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." And when he thought about it, he wept. Very clear that Peter made some very direct statements that were lies. Here's a man that had been all along saying, "You're not going to go to Jerusalem. We're going to defend you. You're not going to die." And yet here he is when it really comes down to the pressure. He says, "I don't even know who he is." And here he spent 3 years of his life as an apostle, a chosen, has seen all the miracles, has confessed that Jesus is in fact the Son of God. But when it came right down to it, he just flat out lied. "I do not know this man." I want to make an interesting note here. Did you notice something? This is something that I want you to think about when we're thinking about lying. They say, "You were with Jesus of Nazareth," in verse 67, but he denied it, saying, I neither know nor understand what you're saying." Let me get this right because I want to make this point. He denied it, but notice what he said. "I neither know nor understand what you are saying." Do you realize, you realize how often we may lie when someone asks us a question that we heard and we act like, "I don't know what you said and I don't understand what you said." And what we do when we do something like that is we hope that the person will move on and say, "Ah, never mind." When we did hear what they said, but that's exactly what Peter did. I just want you to think about how easy sometimes we can fall prey to telling a lie. What's that? As if we didn't hear, but we did. We just didn't like what we heard. It's maybe going to make us uncomfortable, and so we don't want, you know, we're going to act like, "I don't even understand what you're saying." That is a lie, because Peter knew exactly what they were asking him, but he was acting as if he didn't even know what they were talking about. So that's just an aside there. All right, another part of the definition, a according to the American Heritage Dictionary, is a lie can be something that is meant to deceive or give a wrong impression. Another part of that is a lie is false information presented with the intent of deceiving. So you purposely give false information for somebody to draw the wrong conclusion. Can you think of an example of that? I'm sure you already have. Look at Genesis chapter 37. This is the story of Joseph and his brothers. His brothers have thrown him into a pit. And then the Ishmaelites come along and they sell him, and he gets hauled off down to Egypt. Reuben comes back and Joseph is gone. So here's what happens when they go back to their father. You know the story, beginning in verse 31. It says, so they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, we have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not? And he recognized it and said, it is my son's tunic. Okay, so it's not hard to follow. They have sold him. They have his coat, this tunic of colors. They come up with this plan to dip it in goat's blood. They hand it to their father and say, is this your son's coat of colors? And then he takes it. What would you do? You would look at this and go, this is a bloody mess. And so he concludes, it's my son's tunic, verse 33. A wild beast has devoured him. And without a doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. And you're sitting there going, good. Dad thinks that he's dead. That's exactly what they wanted. But what was the definition of a lie? It's false information presented with the intent to deceive. What had they done to their father? They had deceived him. He, for years, thought his son was dead. How miserable. I'm blessed that I haven't lost any of my children. And maybe some have. And it's just, I can't even imagine as a parent losing my child and then grieving all these years, but I've been lied to and he's alive. But that's what they did to their father. So that's a definition. It's a false information that's been presented with the intent of deceiving. Look at Acts chapter 5. Here's another example. This is Ananias and Sapphira in chapter 5. And again, these are not new stories, but from the standpoint of trying to understand the sinfulness of a lie and how there are eternal consequences, in chapter 5 and in verse 1, it says, but a certain man named Ananias with Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession, kept back part of that of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself? While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not your own under your control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. So the what they did was they deceived. They led everybody to believe that they had sold this property and they gave all of the money and yet they'd kept back part of it. And so what they did was the intent to deceive. But of course God knew exactly what was going on and he used the Apostle Peter. Look at verse 7. So, you know, the text said, and by the way, his wife knew about this too. Verse 7 says, now it was about 3 hours later when his wife came in, not knowing that what had happened. She doesn't know her husband has died. Peter answered her, tell me whether you sold the land for so much. And she said, yes, for so much. She lied. She lied. And she dies as well. They were lying through deception. I want to tell you something. Smoke and mirrors. Don't look here, look over there. It's a lie. And we all can be guilty of this. It can be something that we get too close. Maybe somebody's asking a question and we start getting uncomfortable because they're, you know, I'm going to have to tell the truth that I'm doing something wrong. So what do? Well, we put up all this smoke and mirrors. Look over here. Don't come back over here. You go clear over there. And we just find ourselves lying. Well, no matter how you dress it up, you try to hide it. Maybe you bend it, you spin it. Lying is a sin with eternal consequences. You know, I was thinking about this. One of the reasons we are having such a great difficulty in this country right now is we've got leaders that you don't know which one's telling the truth. And if they're all lying, what are you supposed to do? Because they have the control of the money and the law. And you see what I'm saying? And it makes it miserable because you don't know who to believe. And it's just become such a prevalent thing that think about this. I'm going to be a politician. And we say, well, don't go be a politician. How can you be a Christian and be a politician? Why? Because politicians lie. And everybody knows it. It's like if you put Stacey Krim, the politician, that just labels you like the tax collector. A politician we just equate with, you might as well put an equal sign, a liar. And that's sad that's where we're at. But that's what, you know, that's not true with everyone. But it certainly is very easy to fall prey to that type of thing, to put a spin on it. In fact, that's what we call that. I got to get a hold of this, what this person said that was false, and I got to put a spin on it to somehow make it a positive. And it makes it hard. It makes it hard to base a lot of things on. All right, so no matter how you dress it up, a lie is a lie. Now, the eternal consequences part. Look at Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8. Revelation 21 and verse 8. Now, I will say, as a parent, one thing that cannot be tolerated is lying. And when a parent learns that a child is not telling the truth, that is worthy of double the trouble. Because, you know, the truth is so important in a relationship, in all relationships. God requires that. But as a child is being brought up, it just simply cannot be tolerated. You know, a parent needs to know the truth in matters to be able to protect the child, to help them not get into a situation that they can't get themselves out of because they don't know what they're doing because of the child factor. And I know that's hard on teenagers because a teenager thinks they've got it all figured out. But let me tell you, I was a teenager, and I can tell you now, and I think all the adults will shake their head, I found out I didn't know a lot. And I had to eat and chew a lot of words, and you know, because I didn't know what I was talking about. Thought I did. So that relationship is so important. But the most important thing here is consequences. In Revelation 21, verse 8, but the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexual immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. It's interesting. He uses that word plural, liars. I think that perhaps that is, you know, we think of a multitude, and that certainly would be the case, but it also may be the idea of covering all forms of it. The little white lies, the half-truths, whatever you want to call it. All liars, every form of it, through deception, through the look, don't look here, look over there, misdirection. All liars will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone. Notice it's in the company of murder. It's in sexual morality. It's with sorcery. It's with the abominable. And I want you to think about what he says there, because this is actually what got me looking at the verse, but the cowardly. And I want you to just, that's something you can study on. It's something that I'm intrigued about. The cowardly are not going to have a part of eternal life. So these are the consequences. Look at chapter 22 and verse 15. Verse 14, blessed are those who do his commandments, and they may have right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates into the city. But outside are dogs and sorcerers and sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters and whoever loves and practices a lie. So there are eternal consequences to telling lies. Well, lying isn't anything new. It's not something that hasn't been with us from the very beginning. In fact, John chapter 8 in verse 44 tells us that Satan is the father of lies. That's who he is. And it doesn't take us long to figure out why, because if you go back with me to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 4, back in the garden, when the devil appears as a serpent in the garden, and Eve knows exactly what God's instructions are, and then here's what the devil says in verse 4, you will not surely die. That was a lie. God had said they would, and the devil just completely flipped that around and said, no, you won't. And Eve was deceived by that lie. And there was consequences to that lie. Look at the fourth chapter, and in verse 9, you've got Cain who's upset because God accepted Abel, his brother's offering, his sacrifice. He rejected Cain's. He didn't have respect for his. And what does he do? He kills his brother. Let's see. We got too many girls and no brother to brother. Emily gets to rise up and kill Ethan. And you smile, but can you imagine? Can you imagine that happening? And that's exactly what Cain did, is he killed his brother. But look at what it says in verse 9. What it says in verse 9 is, the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? Did Cain know where his brother was? He was right where he left him. And here's what he says to God. I don't know. I don't know. That was a lie. And he lied to God. Because if anybody knew where Abel was, it was Cain. Am I my brother's keeper? What a shame. So lying has been right here at the front of the Scriptures, the very beginning of history. And man's been lying ever since. So we have to be ever so careful to not tell a lie. Let me give an illustration. We missed you at services. That's an innocent question. We say to someone, we missed you at services. And I just like that, say, I didn't feel well. Is that the truth or is that a lie? You know what? There's two people that know whether that's the truth or that's a lie. And that's the person that said that, and then there's the God of heaven that knows the absolute truth about that kind of question. God and the individual who can very easily and quickly say, I didn't feel well. We missed you at Bible study. I had to work late. Truth or a lie? You know why you don't get any resistance? Because I don't have a clue and nobody else around here really has a clue if you really had to work late or not. And nobody's going to question you and pull out their thermometer and say, put that in your mouth and let's see if you had a fever or not. I'm coming over to check that out. Nobody does that. So that's between you and God. But there are eternal consequences if we're not telling the truth. And so a question like, we missed you at Bible study, I had to work late. Well, maybe what happened is I got home in time, but what happened is you made the conscientious decision to not make it to Bible study. And then what you do is you use, I had to work late as the reason. And I just want to tell you, God knows the answer, if that is true or that is false. Did you have to work late? Yes, I had to work late. How many marriages have been ruined because of adultery? But we also have to address the reality of the lies that were told. For an individual to be where they should not be with someone they should not be with. I can't say that any plainer. I don't think you can commit adultery and there not be lies to have gotten to that position. Now, let me tell you something. Nobody may ever find out. A spouse may never know. But you know who knows. And the Lord knows about all those lies. So very quickly, now what I want you to understand is we're lying to avoid a very, very uncomfortable situation. Did you have to work late? No, I didn't. I'm running around with this person over here. Now, who's going to come right out and say that unless they finally have gotten to the point where they're shameful? They're just ashamed. Maybe another lesson would be the ability to blush. I've got a lesson I preached years ago, too scared to commit adultery because of the eternal consequences of that. But let me tell you, you do not get in that situation without telling lies. To be in a place you should not be with someone you should not be with. But we lie to avoid uncomfortable situations. Isn't that what Abraham was doing in Genesis chapter 12, verse 10 to 20, which Steve read for us? Now, it's not mine to get into a whole discussion here. Abraham does this a second time. And it's interesting that if you read both accounts, God actually ends up making Abraham wealthier when these kings and the Pharaoh get themselves in trouble. But they are upset with Abraham because he's not telling the truth. And it's put them in an awkward situation. And in the account, the one king, God knew exactly that he had his intentions were not wrong. And God knew that Abraham put him in a bad situation because he was lying. Well, now listen, but you know what? Actually, Sarah was his half-sister, so he wasn't lying. No, he did it to deceive so they wouldn't harm him. Well, maybe there was a lack of trust on Abraham's part that God was going to take care of him. You remember, God was making promises to Abraham all along. So anyway, very easily, because it's getting uncomfortable. Some of you are getting uncomfortable. You're starting to fan. You imagine that's what happened. What happens, honestly, when you know that you've been asked a question that's direct enough that depending on how you answer this, you're going to tell the truth or you're going to tell a lie? Well, I bet you anything if you were, I suspect that if you were hooked up to a machine, your heart rate would be going up. It would pick up on all the things that you're becoming uncomfortable. Well, listen, God detects all that. He sees right through all that. I just want us to understand, we have to be careful and not tell a lie. God abhors lying. Look at Proverbs chapter 6. There are six things that the Lord hates, yea, seven that are an abomination to him. That's strong language. This is something God absolutely detests and cannot stand. And I want you to look at that verse right there, verse 6 and 7. And you look down and you tell me and you'll spot it. What does he not like? A lying tongue. He abhors that. God expects us to tell the truth. And if I went around and asked, have you told a lie? Every hand will go up. But it's something that we have to make sure that we conquer, we work at. Now, the amazing thing is, you're dealing with God who cannot lie. That's brought to our attention twice. Hebrews chapter 6. In verse 18, God abhors lying because it's not in his nature at all. In fact, in Hebrews 6, to make the point of how secure his promises are, it says God cannot lie. And because God cannot lie and he's made a promise, I want you to understand that what God has said is absolutely true and absolutely going to happen because God cannot lie. You're familiar with that one. Look at Titus chapter 1. And verse 1 and 2, where it is stated again. It's just not the nature of God at all to lie. Paul, a bondservant of God, verse 1, and an apostle of Jesus Christ, according to the faith of God's elect and the acknowledgement of the truth which accords with godliness, in hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised before time began. He firms up the hope of eternal life by saying God cannot lie. So if you were going to do a lesson on things that are impossible, there's one. Now, because God cannot lie, and he abhors a lying tongue, what do you think that that means with regards to how he views deception and half-truths, and I've got to avoid this, and we don't speak the truth? All right, so the last two things I want to talk about is this. Lying has a devastating effect upon people. It most assuredly can. Because if I were asked the question, have you ever been the casualty of a lie? Yeah, I suspect everybody here has. Look, in 1 Kings chapter 13, this is a story that actually, Lord willing, on Wednesday night, Brother Wallace is going to look at this story as part of the lesson. I did not know that at the time I was putting this together. And then I did my lesson, and I said, well, this will fit well together. This is the story of the man of God who is sent in verses 1 through 9. He's sent to King Jeroboam. Jeroboam is Bethel, in Bethel. He had set a golden calf up in Dan. He had put a golden calf down in Bethel. He's there in Bethel, and he is offering sacrifices to that golden calf on the altar that he's had built before that calf. And the man of God is sent, and he comes to King Jeroboam, and he tells him that Josiah is going to be born. And Josiah is going to sacrifice the wicked priest, and he's going to put their bones on that altar, and he's going to burn them up. And to validate his prophecy, what he tells Jeroboam is, he says that there's going to be a sign given. And that very day, the altar split apart and ashes were poured out, verse 3, just like he had said would happen. Now, Jeroboam's reaction to all that is that you need to arrest that man. And as he stuck his arm out, his hand out, so you could see him pointing, his hand drew up, withered back, where he lost everything with regards to his hand. And so he humbles himself and asks the man of God to pray that God would change that back. And God heard that prayer and he got his hand back. So Jeroboam wants as you can imagine, he's happy. He wants the man of God to come, and he wants him to come and eat and drink, and he wants to give him a reward. But the problem with that is the man of God has been told very specifically by God, and this is in verse 8, but the man of God said to the king, if you were to give me half of your house, I would not go in with you, nor would I eat bread nor drink water in this place. For so it was commanded me by the word of the Lord, saying, you shall not eat bread, nor drink water, nor return by the same way you came. So he went another way, and he did not return by the way that he came. Well, this old prophet hears about this, and this old prophet lives in Bethel. And so he gets his donkey, and he goes off, and he finds the man of God sitting under an oak tree, and he invites him back to his house to eat and drink. And the man of God says, I can't do that. And then notice what it says beginning in verse 8 and 9. Actually, in verse 16, I cannot return with you nor go in with you, neither can I eat bread nor drink water with you in this place. For I've been told by the word of the Lord, you shall not eat bread nor drink water there, nor return by going the way you came. He said, I too am a prophet as you are, and an angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with you to my house, or your house, that he may eat and drink, eat bread and drink water. Do you see what it says? He was lying. This man flat out lied to this man of God, and he believed that lie. You know the rest of the story? A lion killed him. In fact, God used that old prophet to tell him, I'm going to kill you with a lion. And sure enough, when he left, he was killed by a lion. And we scratch our head and say, wow, that wasn't fair. He was lied to. My point was, lying has a devastating effect upon other people. Now, this man, we could study the text and we could understand that God had specifically told him. And we can look at other passages that if you had any question, did God have a problem with you asking for clarification? Think of Gideon. I want to make sure that this wasn't an accident. Will you flip the water and the dew and the fleece? God, I don't seem to find in scriptures when somebody's intent was sincere and honest that God would not validate for them what I'm telling you. So he could have gone to God and said, this man is telling me, you're telling me to come back. And God could have said no. But he believed the lie. And he lost his life. God held him accountable. Because how more specific could God have been? Don't eat and don't drink and don't go a different way. He went back to Bethel with this man. That's where the old prophet was from. And he lost his life. When you tell a lie, it can have profound effects upon other people. From the reading of the rest of the account, if you look at verse 29, it seems like that old prophet had remorse. The prophet took up the corpse of the man of God, laid it on the donkey, brought it back so that the old prophet came to the city to mourn and to bury him. Then he laid the corpse in his own tomb, and they mourned over him, saying, "Alas, my brother." So it was, after he had buried him, that he spoke to his son, saying, "When I am dead, then bury me in the tomb where the man of God is buried. Lay my bones beside his bones." His lie cost this man his life. And that's sad. And we have to understand that when we lie, it can have a profound effect on a relationship. You think about the husband and wife relationship. You go back to the example of committing adultery. Does that not have a profound effect? And somebody is devastated by that? Well, you know, you might tell a lie and ruin somebody's reputation. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 16, you understand that in the Ten Commandments, he says, "You shall not bear false witness." What is that? What that's saying is you lie about the person. You say, "I saw him going over here," and you didn't. It's exactly why the soldiers at the tomb were bribed to say that the disciples came and stole the body. And we'll make sure you don't get killed because you lost a dead body. They took a bribe to lie, to say the disciples. It goes back to that, wow, I'm going to lose my life, or I can take the money and lie and save my life. Well, I'll just lie. Today, what happens? Well, in the schools, they teach the kids situation ethics. It's okay to lie in that kind of situation. Lie to keep yourself from being killed. And you might have thought about Rahab. That's another story. That's another thing. The Bible never says that she was right in lying when they came and said, "Are the spies here?" It doesn't seem to condone that. In Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 5, you might tell a lie and ruin somebody else's their reputation. He says, "A faithful witness does not lie, but a false witness breathes out lies." A faithful witness does not lie. One other passage here, by way of conclusion, is in Psalm 52. If you'll turn over there. Lying is evil. I think by this point we've established that. It's devastating. God expects us to tell the truth. In Psalm 52 and verse 1, it says, "Why do you boast in evil, O mighty man? The goodness of God endures continually. Your tongue devises destruction, like a sharp razor working deceitfully. You love evil more than good, lying rather than speaking righteousness. You love all devouring words, your deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy you forever. He shall take you away and pluck you out of your dwelling place and uproot you from the land of the living." Wow, that's pretty direct. But what I want you to understand is lying rather than speaking righteousness. It can become second nature. And I tell you what, if you've got a child that you don't know if they're telling you the truth or not, tell me that's not miserable. You can't count on them to tell you the truth. It just becomes who they are. Rather than tell the truth and say, "Yeah, I ate that apple," they lie and say, "No, I didn't take that apple." Well, what was the purpose of lying about taking an apple? Why would you lie? But it just becomes who you are. And the Bible condemns that. We need to think very clearly about what it means to lie. In Psalm 120 and verse 2, this should be our prayer. Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and from a deceitful tongue. Psalm 120 and verse 2. Now, by way of invitation, God can't lie. So what does it mean, like we looked this morning, when he says, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, and he that believeth not shall be condemned? Does that hold any weight? God can't lie. He means what he says, and he says what he means. Revelation 2:10, he says, be faithful unto death, and I'll give you a crown of life. I'm counting on that. I'm counting on that promise to be true, aren't you? God can't lie. So we count on God telling the truth. And he expects us to do the same. So if you're here tonight, will you not then render obedience to the gospel? Because if you do not obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, 2 Thessalonians chapter 1 tells us that Jesus is going to come with his angels in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God and that do not obey the gospel. Now that's going to happen. God can't lie. So are you ready for that day to come? You can know for certain that what God has said is true. If you're a child of God and things are amiss, and maybe you're a lying, well, all liars are going to go to the lake of fire. And God has said it, and it is true. If we can help you in any way, we invite you to come as together we stand and sing.